Welcome to the Mind and Fitness Podcast for Wednesday, September the 23rd. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and as always, this podcast is brought to you by patrons of the podcast. Go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast if you are interested in placing a monetary contribution to the show. Some of these patrons have been here all the way since November of 2018, which is just wild, and that's Arnie, Barb, and Kim. Thank you so much for throwing some dollars in the tip jar over the last couple of years. Pretty wild, 22 months as supporting patrons continuing, so that's pretty awesome. Let me give a shout out to Mindy and Irina and Kelly and Tony, Francisco, Ashley, Michael, Mike, Victoria, Chad, Anthony, Jennifer, Eddie, Jenny, Christina, Ross, Julie, Casey, Alyssa, Brian, Helen, Arnie, Barb, Kim, once again, thank you so much for supporting the podcast. And if you don't feel like becoming a monetary patron of the show, the best thing that you can do is leave a review on iTunes, or I guess it's called Apple Podcasts now. Listen to me. So leave a review on Apple Podcasts, 5 stars if you think that I deserve it. And more people would be able to find the show. It's kind of amazing the amount of people that I'm getting that are joining the Facebook group, the Mind and Fitness Podcast, The Leaders of Pain, which I put out and asked me anything a few days ago. And I got a handful of questions. That's what I'm going to cover today. And that's what today will be about. But that's pretty much where you would be able to contribute. And actually, I want to try and change pace. So usually what happens with these Ask Me Anything is what I'll do is I will ask a few days in advance, I'll say, hey, I'm doing this episode and it's going to be on Ask Me Anything, and I'll answer them and send me a message on Facebook or comment on the Facebook page. I am certainly trying to limit my social media use. It is just a wildly toxic place right now. It's so polarizing, and I feel like it's going to be that way until the next presidential election in the United States, which is about a month and a half away. And then that period of time between November 4th and January 20th, when the actual inauguration would happen, if a new president does happen, it probably is going to become even more tense. And then you have the coronavirus stuff on top of that, and you have all the social injustice and the inequality and all the infighting and everything like that. It is just a really, really wild time. And I'm finding social media to be incredibly polarizing on both sides, whichever side it is that you're on. I'm finding myself resenting people that I really don't want to resent. And so it would just be easier to just turn it off. So in these Ask Me Anythings, what I would actually prefer is almost do it like a mailbag style where I have a bank of questions. And so send them to me at eddie@themindandfitnesspodcast.com. My Facebook Messenger is still on my phone, but I've had the app deleted for a couple of months. So if you send me a message on Messenger, I can get it that way. Email would probably be best. So again, eddie@themindandfitnesspodcast.com is going to be the best place to send over questions. And my hope is that I can get, you know, 5 questions a week or a handful of questions a week, and then I can bank them and do them on the next Ask Me Anything episode. So today there are a handful of questions, like I said, from 3 different people, but it looks like they all have several questions. So it might be more than just a handful. But I wanted to kind of jump into this social media idea. You know, one thing, I watched this documentary a couple years ago on HBO, and you can get a free trial of HBO, and I would urge everybody to do that. There's a really great, what is the name of this? I want to make sure that I'm getting the name of it right. It's called One Nation Under Stress, and it's hosted by Dr. Sanjay Gupta, who's the, I believe that he is the chief medical officer for CNN, like chief medical correspondent. And so, but it talks about some of the devastating effects of stress on our health and how stress is essentially everywhere. And of course, he works for one of the cable news outlets, so his network is not contributing to helping people alleviate this, because it is just fear everywhere. And fear, as we know, is essentially the leading cause of chronic pain, a fear of something. It can be, you know, repressed emotion based. It can also be fear of a lot of different things. And essentially just being bombarded with fearful rhetoric all the time is not doing anybody any good. And so I think this documentary is really, really well done. And it's something that you should check out. It would be well worth your hour and a half or however long it is that it is. Okay, so first question comes from Suzanne. I've been having post-tibial tarsal tunnel pain. That is a mouthful. You know, I have this theory that the bigger the mouthful, when it comes to symptoms, essentially the more bullshit that it probably is. So let me Google what this actually is. And see, I'm doing what I tell everybody not to do, which is Googling symptoms, but I need to understand where it is that she is talking about, although it doesn't really matter all that much. Here we go, healthline.com. Oh, it's in the foot. Let's see, I thought it would be in the hand. Okay, I understand what this is. I mean, it's essentially heel pain. Let's say what Dr. Google says. Dr. Google says this is rare, fewer than 200,000 US cases per year. Says usually resolves within months. Tarsal tunnel syndrome usually develops as a result of a prior ankle injury. Symptoms may include burning pain at the sole of the foot that's worse than standing or during activity. Other symptoms include numbness or tingling at the base of the foot. Treatment includes avoiding certain activities. It also may include orthotics and anti-inflammatory medications. In rare cases, steroid injections can reduce inflammation. She goes on to say, so I've been having post-tibial tarsal tunnel pain and was doing well. I know this is TMS. I recently went back to wearing normal shoes after being told not to by podiatrists. So now I have heel pain after returning to normal shoes. Do I assume this is TMS, like a fear of wearing normal shoes? Could be. Certainly could be a fear of wearing my normal shoes, but it might also just be like an expectation that something will happen. So, you know, you've had it however many times you've been to a podiatrist or a doctor or whatever, and they've told you ad nauseum, you wear normal shoes and that's going to cause pain. You sort of have that ingrained in you. And so you know that if you remove that safety net, you have this expectation of pain and issues. So that's something certainly to keep in mind. And I think that that's probably more of what it is than anything. It works very similarly to if we go and we do a physical activity and we have an expectation that's going to hurt or it's going to suck or it's going to... Very rarely as adults do I think that we go into something thinking it's going to be terrible. And then when it's done saying, oh, you know, that wasn't so bad. Tattoos work that way. Piercings work that way. Really doing any sort of a physical exertion activity, it's really going to be as bad as you expect it to be. With kids, I find that they can flip that script a little bit better. But like my daughter, great example, we're doing private swimming lessons right now. And she talks about how bad it's going to be and how terrible it's going to be. Or she did. She's actually starting, I think she's starting to like it, but she just will not tell me that. But she goes to swimming lessons. She doesn't like putting her head under the water. She doesn't like getting water on her face. She doesn't like getting water in her ears or nose, whatever. But she goes and she has a blast and she does awesome and she's learning so quickly. And I noticed this didn't happen after the last session, but after each session, she tells me how terrible that was and all this kind of stuff. But she went in with that expectation. But I can see that look on her face and the smiles and the pride that she has when she does it. And that tells me that it's not really going that terribly. And so she's essentially lying to herself when it comes to that kind of thing. But I think it's really an expectation of pain, and you have this expectation that wearing normal shoes. So to dissolve that expectation, you have to really kind of just do it more and unlearn it a little bit, you know, unlearn what you've been told, which is going to be difficult. But the more that you can absorb anything relating to foot pain, and I would recommend you can go to thankyoudrsarno.org and you can actually just search. There's a search bar on the left-hand side. You can search heel pain, foot pain, maybe even type in your exact thing if there's anything there. But anything related to the heel or the foot is going to be a good place to go. I mean, the way that this reads, it sounds really similar to a lot of the same kind of foot and heel issues. And so I don't really have much of a doubt that it falls in the same category, regardless of whatever the length of the mouthful that is tibial tarsal tunnel pain. So that's all I got. Allison. This comes from Allison. Okay. Actually starts with, okay, what is the difference between allowing your pain to be and living with your pain? That's a fine line and intention in here somewhere, but I'm not sure what that looks like in practice. Let me read that again. Between allowing your pain to be and living with your pain. It is a fine line. I'm not even sure there's a line there. It kind of seems like the same thing. If I will put an asterisk and a third element on there and say being indifferent to your pain, which, yes, you're living with it. Yes, you're allowing it to be, but you're indifferent by the fact that it's there. So that's what I would say as a recommendation, is being able to bring yourself to a place of indifference. And it's the same thing as not having judgment to it. You're sitting there and back pain comes on or neck pain comes on or whatever. But just being able to arrive at a place of indifference where you don't really care whether it's there or it's not, because it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. And that inherently will calm it down. This works the same way where if you're sitting in the woods and a bear walks by, if you're panicking, your system is getting so amped up and you have the adrenaline, you have the sweaty palms and you have all this. But if you just have indifference, I've told this story quite a few times on the podcast, but this is sort of how I arrived to get over a drastic fear of commercial flying. That forever, the takeoff and the landing was so terrible, and I would freak out, and I like grab my wife's leg and I'm squeezing her thigh and all this. And then about 10 years ago, I was landing in Dallas in an ice storm and crazy turbulence on the way down. And I remember in the past, that would have been the end for me. I would have just freaked the fuck out by something like that happening. But I almost sort of like put my arms out as a term of acceptance. That's how I kind of visualized myself and just thought, if this plane goes down, it goes down and I die. There's literally not a thing that I can do to stop this plane from crashing into the ground and me dying in a ball of fire. So I was indifferent to the fear of that. And with that, the fear went away. And I didn't have it again. Now, if I ride a little puddle jumper that fits 7 people, that's a little bit of a different story. But that's just something to keep in mind, is arriving to a place of indifference is really going to be your best friend. This question also comes from Allison. Hi, Eddie. Sorry to jump on here again, but you did ask for questions, and I've got plenty. Keep them coming, and email them to me if you can, eddie@themindandfitnesspodcast.com. Just keep sending them, literally. Something comes across your mind, keep my email in your favorites and write them as many as you want. It seems like there are 2 stages to this healing. The first stage takes more work to initially teach the brain and the nervous system to calm down and establish the link between mind and body. Then the second stage is kind of ongoing, but the brain has already made the link between stress and symptoms, so it settles down quicker when symptoms do come up. Would this be an accurate interpretation? Absolutely. You are spot on. There are 2 stages. First, you need to be able to, and the first one seems like the toughest one of all for people, to be able to grasp this, but actually to truly vest in it and believe that it is going to work for you. Because a lot of people kind of go half in, half out, and they say, I read this thing and I believe this thing, but I don't know if this thing is going to work for me. And that's where a lot of people get stuck, and they get stuck there for a long time and they sort of stay there. It's amazing how many people will come to me that I have known for years, 20 years, and they'll say, I have this issue, you know, back issue, neck issue, whatever, and it's been going on for a long time. You know, I hear that you talk about this stuff, about like chronic pain, what would you recommend I do? And then I tell them, and they say, oh, okay, I'll go and do that. And then 2 or 3 months later, they tell me how many times they've been to the chiropractor or the doctor or whatever, and nothing's still working, and what do I recommend doing? And we just kind of do this game for, you know, 6 months, a year, 9 months, whatever, and we just keep playing that. So being able to get over that initial stage is probably the biggest one. But then just being able to, like, you know, I'm lifting weights 4 or 5 days a week, heavy weights, and doing it first thing in the morning, which is not the easiest thing in the world to do. You know, the alarm goes off at 6:24 a.m., I go in the bathroom, I take a shower. It's not even really a shower, it's just literally spray water on my face to wake me up. I brush my teeth, I come downstairs, I take Lucy outside, I strap her or tether her back to her kennel, and then I go into the garage and I work out for an hour and 10 minutes. And there may be times when I'm going through and I'm doing some kind of a workout and my shoulder will light up or my ankle will light up. And at first I'll just think, oh no, like some kind of an issue, some kind of pain issue. Did I tweak it? Did I do this? Did I do that? But once I get to a place of, it's most likely not really anything, and I'm reacting to something that I was maybe thinking about a moment or two earlier, or maybe my system is just a little bit more amped up, and you know, it just is what it is. And very fast, almost 100% of the time, that will fizzle out very, very fast when I get to that place. So that's really the ongoing component, and you start to have it happen less and less. And there's other things that you can do, by the way, that are sort of like a maintenance plan, if you will. And top of that list, I think, and Dr. Hanscom talks a lot about this, and I've talked a lot about this, particularly in the last couple of months, is making sure that you're getting adequate sleep, making sure that you're getting like 7 or more hours of really, really restful sleep. I was listening to this podcast from my gym a couple of weeks ago, and one of the guys that was talking on it had said, go and sleep for eight hours for 1 week straight and see how different you feel. It's amazing how much different I will feel on 5 hours of sleep versus 7 versus 7.5 versus 8. It is just amazing how much more recovered and refreshed I feel. And there's certain things that you can take, different supplements and things like that, if you want to go that route, that can sort of help you get into sleep. And again, some people get very polarized and they get very opinionated when it comes to taking certain things. But remember, Dr. Sarno would prescribe a heavy painkiller if it helped people get to a place of where they need to be to heal. So I'm a big fan and proponent of anything that can get you to sleep faster and deeper is a good thing. And some people will go wild on some of this stuff, but it really is very simple. Magnesium is great for that. Zinc is great for that. B6 is great for that. And you can get it all in a nice, very inexpensive package for about $15 for a month's supply, or maybe even a month and a half supply of like a ZMA or something along those lines. I've given coupon codes for Night Gains before. You can go and check it out at Paragon Nutrition. It has all that same stuff in it. It has the magnesium, the B6, has a little bit of melatonin in it, has some zinc in it, has some GABA in it. So those are kind of my recommendations, is to be able to do whatever you can to get to a maintenance plan and keep it simple. That's what I always say in sales in my day job. Keep it simple, comma, stupid. It's really the best way to go. So I remembered now that I actually got an email. Let's see here. I got an email, I think yesterday, as I record this, from a listener. And I'm just going to read this. And it may be relevant, and it may be not. Oh, this is from Karen. I've enjoyed your podcast. Thank you for all the work you're doing. The short question on dislocations. I'm asking more around the fear behind it. I can't imagine the actual dislocation as Dr. Sarno TMS thing. You'd be correct. I mean, I can't either imagine that. I've dislocated my shoulder before, and I know the shoulder didn't happen as a result of TMS, but I think that the pain that happened after very most likely was. Longer version, if you were up to reading. I dislocated my right shoulder in my 20s, where it went in and out fast. That's called a subluxation, by the way. But it came full on in and out, popped back in fast. Then it happened 2-ish times in my 30s. I'm now 59. When it would pop, it was always from basic acts, like putting a towel on my head after a shower. I was always very athletic my entire childhood, swimming, all sports, skiing, tennis. It never happened from an actual sport. When I was 44, I fell hard and my left shoulder dislocated and I went to the hospital. They put it back in, all good. When I was 50, I remember having a deep massage, and that night I adjusted myself in bed and the right shoulder popped out. But again, it went right back in. Again, that's a subluxation. Then I had a hip replacement. I then went to Dr. Rashbaum, who took over Sarno's practice. I had to beg him for x-rays. He was insisting it was also TMS. He finally wrote me a prescription. I was barely able to walk the 7 blocks to x-ray. Dr. Rashbaum called me the next day and said, you have severe arthrosis. You may or may not need a hip replacement. I finally went for it, as I was in severe pain for the severe limp for at least 5-ish years. I had a successful hip replacement soon after I visited Dr. Rashbaum. 3 years later, I fell and dislocated my hip. Surgery side, went to the ER, had it put back in. Then it happened 6 months later. She goes on to just ask if this would be a topic of worthy of dislocation. I think, topic of discussion, Freudian slip. I don't know about a whole episode or even a chunk of an episode, because dislocations can happen. I mean, who knows? Maybe there's hypermobility in a joint, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, by the way. A lot of what you're describing, because it does seem like you do differentiate between slipped in, slipped out, slipped out, then slipped back in, and then also the ones where you would go to the actual hospital. So you were having subluxations, then you were having dislocations. I mean, I don't know. It's it seems like you had it remedied, and they put you on Zoloft, so you're trying to get over all the trauma and the fear of the dislocations. Somebody wrote you that prescription and felt like this was a psychological thing because you had this extreme fear around it. Which again, it comes down to an expectation. If you sort of believe that something is going to happen, you believe that something is going to be terrible, or reoccurrence of injury, I think, is a lot of times, especially as an athlete, is a fear of getting of it happening. Like when I was having, and I've told this story before as well, but when I was having a lot of neck issues, I've been a pro wrestling nerd my entire life. And one of the premier injuries that seems to happen and really put dampers on the careers of wrestlers and MMA fighters and football players and whatever are anything to do with the neck. And so my neck starts hurting, and I know how these stories typically go in the thing that I watch and that I've loved for so long. So again, it's a very subconscious expectation that this is just what happens to athletes, is they get a neck injury. And I've now seen it in the CrossFit and weightlifting world. People have these mysterious herniated discs in their neck, and they go and have neck surgery, or they have spinal fusions, or they have whatever. And then evidently they fall out of the sport, or they have a drastic reduction in what it is that they can do, or drastic reduction in what it is that they can do. So, I think a lot of it has to do with an expectation, to be honest. So, thank you, Karen, for the email and the question. I feel like I got another one. Hopefully I didn't delete it. Maybe I just dreamed that. I don't know. Let me look one more time. Oh, this person emailed me about COVID stuff. I guess this is what I'll close with, because it is the most polarizing topic out there right now. Hey, Eddie, I listen to your podcast and enjoy listening to the interesting guests that you interview. I heard of you from Nicole Sachs's LCSW podcast. On one of your podcasts, you mentioned that some of your friends were bashing you because they thought you were irresponsible for not going to get a coronavirus test. I was mortified to hear that your friends were pressuring you about that. Don't they know that the false positives and false negatives are very high on these tests, and that a person's viral load changes from day to day, maybe even hour to hour? Your friends should be banding together to motivate everyone to strengthen their immune systems, because that is the best way to deal with all viruses around us. In parentheses, healthy lifestyle habits and beliefs, healthy weight, healthy sleep patterns, moderate exercise, eat lots of fresh natural foods, not processed. I thought you'd be interested in this short video. And then goes on to send me a video about coronavirus and false flag and all that kind of stuff. I'm not into the conspiracy theory stuff. And who knows, maybe that's what this is, maybe it's not. And I'll listen to it because I don't want to depreciate. However, there's just lots out there that kind of have me being like, 5G, really? And that's just an example. That's not what this video is about. But, 5G and this being a product of the political system, and the Democrats created coronavirus to get Donald Trump out of office. And then I sort of sit back and I just think like, yeah, but this is going on around the world. And I don't know if anybody in New Zealand gives a shit that Donald Trump is the president or not. I just don't. So that's my thought. Yes, I did know that it depends on the viral load at the moment. I got smartened up from a nurse friend of mine who had pointed that out to me. And then when I told my friends about that, they said that she can go F herself, and just kept pressing on with getting the test done. So got the test done and it was negative, and it is what it is. And I'm a big believer in strengthening the immune system. And actually, when I first read this email from this listener, it made me think about a recent discussion I had with those same friends. We were talking about doing a 1,000-mile motorcycle ride. It's actually called the Iron Butt, and it's a real thing because you're sitting on a motorcycle for so long that your ass turns to iron, which is probably what it would feel like. But I do want to do it. And they were talking about how hard it was going to be. And this was not my idea, by the way. This was one of the other guys. And I had said, it's not really going to be that hard. You do some, you train for it like you would train for anything else. Like I trained for a Tough Mudder, like I trained to run a half marathon, like I trained for weightlifting competitions. And a lot of that training is to put your recovery in a better place. So I'd said, you do a few weeks of some Bulgarian split squats and get your hamstrings and your glutes much stronger, and your lower back much stronger, do some RDLs, that kind of thing. And I was quickly shut down, and they had just said, IPA and Advil. And that's what, and even when we went on our motorcycle trip recently, they were talking about all the Advil that they were going to take before they went to sleep because of the strain that those long rides take on you. I'm just thinking like, God, this is like so United States-y. And I recognize it's all around the world, but a take a pill society, which is what Nicole Sachs says. And it's so true that instead of, dedicating just a little bit of time to getting yourself in the right place to do something like that. The thought is, oh, I'll take some Advil and drink a little bit more, and that'll, you know, dampen the results of it, which is just kind of the wrong way to go. So I'm with you. You know, when it comes to the prevention and the spread and such of the coronavirus, there is a lot of hope on a vaccine being developed, and I'm not anti-vax. I'm very pro-vaccine, but I think that the shortest time span for a vaccine to actually be deployed was something like 25 years or something like that, and it was the smallpox vaccine. So kind of relying on this smoking gun and silver bullet that may or may not come in the speed to which they think it will, and then you have to convince hundreds of millions of people to actually take that thing when there's going to be plenty. And I was listening to this great interview from Dr. Fauci on NPR. I was telling my wife, I feel super old listening to NPR, but whatever. But he was talking about the thought and the notion that steps are being skipped in the name of health to get a vaccine deployed fast. Because that was kind of what I had thought too. We're developing something so fast, and that's surely going to have health consequences. He explained that it is actually monetary consequences, because normally, as vaccines advance through stages, you go to phase one and you don't create any more vaccine or product or anything like that until it's totally gone through the first stage. And there's a little bit of a delay, and then you get to stage two and you go totally through that before you really do anything else with it. In this case, they're investing hundreds of millions of dollars on the assumption that it's going to get through a stage. And that way, when they get to the next stage, they're already ready and they can do it. So right now, and in fact, as of months ago, they're developing hundreds of millions of doses of a vaccine that may or may not work, that's not through all the trials yet. But if it gets through successfully, they will be able to deploy immediately. And so I was very impressed by that. And I think that that's actually really a really great way of putting it, and something that really kind of put me in my place about a vaccination. But I am a huge believer, and Dr. Hanscom, by the way, got COVID. He's in his 70s. He got COVID. I think he's in his 70s. Had got COVID, fully recovered, and he wrote that Thrive and Survive guide based on his experience and working with all these doctors around the world on being able to put us in the best position to not only not get coronavirus in the first place, but to fight it off as best we possibly can. And his guide largely is around expressive writing. It's around adequate sleep. It's around all the stuff that I talk about in this podcast, but it's related to COVID. And spoiler alert, it's just about, it replies to just about everything, whether it's an illness or whether it's continuous pain issues or whatever. That's why I preach physical activity so freaking much, as I think that it can do so much for you and your immune system, and getting out there and experiencing nature and exposing yourself to things and getting uncomfortable and being able to dampen your fear and being able to dampen your fight or flight response. And it doesn't need to go off every single time your boss walks in the door to talk to you. Save it for the moments like the tiger or the bear that's walking through your backyard, that's jumping on you or chasing your kids or whatever, because that's really when it's needed. It's not needed at all these other times. When you walk down the street and somebody's not wearing a mask and you feel like they should be wearing a mask, you don't need to freak out then. This is part of why I'm having such a dilemma, social dilemma, with social media right now, is that it's always this or it's always that. We're either all the way on this side or we're all the way on that side. And it's really starting to drive me fucking nuts. So, like I said, write me an email if you have anything to say or you have any question. It will come up on an upcoming episode. Eddie at the mindandfitnesspodcast.com. Thank you so much for all of your questions. I hope that you guys have a great rest of the week.